This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Calling someone a Neanderthal is an insult, evoking the image of a shambling troglodyte ape man who grunted a lot and could not compete with humans. Some scientists and Geico ad writers argue that Neanderthals might have been a little more sophisticated.
It's so easy to use Geico.com. A caveman could do it.
What's that supposed to mean? Do you hear that?
That is really condescending.
Well, maybe not quite that sophisticated. Journalist Merrick Kahn has been following a variety of research on Neanderthals, including findings from a cave in Spain that suggest that Neanderthals were cognitively and culturally equivalent to anatomically modern humans living at the same time. Merrick wrote about the Neanderthal mind for the latest issue of Eon magazine. His article begins with the discovery of a shell perforated with holes made some 50,000 years ago.
One of the big questions that people always want to know about ancient hominins is whether they were like us in having a sense of symbolism, whether they had abstract thoughts, whether the things that they've left behind them speak to us not just of practical concerns like catching food and cutting it up. And it's really hard to interpret some of the objects that are left in the archaeological record for us to speculate about. But there are a few things that seem to speak to us unequivocally of symbolism. And these are shells, which are found at a cave site in Spain, and they have holes in them. Now, there doesn't seem to be any practical explanation why an ancient hominin would make a hole in a shell, still less why it appears that at least some of these ones were collected, perforated, and strung together as necklaces. But these were made by what we call anatomically modern humans. Now, that's a mouthful, but we have to say that in order to avoid the confusion between humans that were kind of basically like us but lived 100,000 years ago and people who are around today. What gets interesting is whether other forms of human also had some sort of symbolic culture. And the obvious candidates, the only real candidates, are Neanderthals, who were closely related to us. They had the same size brains as us. They were around relatively recently in human evolution terms, certainly until a few tens of thousands of years ago. And there are just a few tantalizing hints that maybe they had symbolic culture and maybe they got to it themselves. They evolved it under their own steam, as it were, rather than copying it from the anatomically modern humans who they encountered late in their existence.
So this cave in Spain, Cueva de los Aviones, I think it is called, what was found there and why are shells thought to be so significant in that place at that time? What does that tell us about the migration of Neanderthals?
The shells that were found at the Spanish site aren't as impressive in aesthetic terms to our eyes as the finds that are much older that come from South Africa and North Africa. For one thing, it doesn't look as though they were deliberately perforated. It looks as though somebody found two, three shells on a beach somewhere that had holes in them and picked them up and looked after them in some way. So the signal of symbolism is much, much more elusive. You sort of think, well, does this necessarily amount to a whole culture? But on the other hand, it's really hard to find another explanation for this behavior. Somebody picked these things up. It couldn't have been for any desire to use them for any practical purpose. It looks as though they were using them for adornment. The point about this is that it was 50,000 years ago, before anatomically modern humans got to Europe. The only people that were around in Europe at that time were Neanderthals. Therefore, it looks as though this is evidence that Neanderthals had sufficient sense of symbolism, of abstraction, of self-identity to want to adorn themselves with shells. And it's rather wonderful, I think, that across this huge distance of both of time and space, that very different kinds of people were finding the same means of expressing whatever it was that they were expressing.
So this is one of the things that an archaeological research professor from the University of Barcelona, his name is João Juliao, he has been looking at and trying to gauge how sophisticated their culture was at that time. What has he learned and what is he proposing?
Professor De Liao has taken a very bold and provocative stand that I think is absolutely vital to the discussions that, people in the Neanderthal field, the Neanderthal trade, are having so energetically about what and who Neanderthals were. Because his view is that they were us, that they differed from anatomically modern humans only in things that aren't really very important. They were stockier, sure, and they had different shaped skulls, but that doesn't matter. What was inside those skulls was just the same as what was inside the skulls of the modern humans who they encountered later on in their time in Europe, and inside our own skulls, all the same. They thought the same as modern humans do, and perhaps had they been left to get on with it and hadn't encountered moderns, they would have developed in perhaps quite a similar way.
We're speaking with Merrick Kahn, a journalist and author who wrote about current research on the cognitive abilities and cultural expressions of the Neanderthal mind. His article is in the latest issue of Eon magazine. Now, Merrick, recently a group of scientists challenged Liao's claims about modern humans and Neanderthals being intellectually and culturally equal. By using improvements in radiocarbon dating technology, they claim to have discovered anatomically modern humans making much more complex and symbolic art than Neanderthals living at the same time. What can you tell us about that?
The dates have been pushed back in a way that really challenges Professor Liao's claim that there's a clear separation between this fantastic stuff that was done by anatomically modern humans and Neanderthals. There's a flickering signal, as people have put it, of art and symbolic culture. There's stuff that really strongly looks like it's personal adornment in the case of the African shells. But there's not that much to go on, and it's not really art as we recognise it in our everyday use of the term. Then all of a sudden, people start making figurines. They start making figurines, images of people. They start making flutes out of bones. One of the earliest things that has turned up is something that could be, you know, around 40,000 years old. It's a lion man figure, a figure that appears to have a human form body and the head of an animal, perhaps a cave lion. Now, right from the word go, as soon as people start making figurative art, they not only invent figurative art, but they invent forms that don't actually exist in nature. And it's the astonishing impact of encountering these things that perhaps has turned our heads.
Does any of this research going on give us any new insight into why the Neanderthal did not survive?
Well, Charles Liao's view is that anatomically modern humans, who were only different from Neanderthals in things that don't really, really matter to us, came in such numbers that they simply absorbed the small, scattered Neanderthal populations into their own populations. And we now have demonstration that something like this could well have happened, because it's become apparent from the Neanderthal genome work that people whose heritage lies outside Africa recently tend to carry a very small percentage of Neanderthal-derived genes.
Well, I guess the only way to really determine the cognitive ability of the Neanderthal would be to follow through on some proposals that have been made to create Neanderthal clones. How far along are those proposals?
This year, a complete genome sequence was published for a single Neanderthal individual, which is of a quality that's equal to that of genome sequences that have been produced for actual living modern human individuals. This is really, really, really something, because a lot of people in the field would not have expected this even a few years ago. That doesn't mean to say that all the other things could be solved straight away. Scientifically, we're looking at decades. And I think socially we're also looking at decades. And I think it's really interesting to ask some questions about how society would need to change. And of course, the question is, would he or she fit right in, or would he or she be actually a differently abled, in a very profound and varied sense, kind of human? And you couldn't just have one. I think there is actually an argument that human rights considerations would mandate that you would have to produce a whole cohort. And then you would have, well, what would you call it? You would call it a tribe. You would have created a race in the old sense of the term, but one without a culture of its own. There's some pretty profound questions there.
Well, and I thank you for bringing them to us, Merrick Kahn, journalist and author, most recently of Turned Out Nice, How the British Isles Will Change as the World Heats Up. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
We do have a link to his article on the Neanderthal mine. It's from Eon Magazine, and that link is at wordofmouthradio.org. Now stay with us for an anatomically modern suburban human being who decided to live a little more like our ancestors. He's going to share some of his messy, not-so-tasty adventures as a suburban hunter-gatherer. That's when Word of Mouth continues in just a moment.